We'll be back with phone calls with Paul Bartholomew as we talk about these strange phenomena. Share your stories or your questions with us. And welcome back to Coast. We're with Paul Bartholomew. Paul's website, of course. He doesn't have one yet, do you, Paul?
We are currently underway getting one up, so it should be up shortly.
Super. Now, you remember seeing the Patterson-Gimlin film. What did you think of that?
Oh, I was very impressed by it. I think that that was a key moment in cryptozoology, that you had two people who remained to their very end. You know, Bob Gimlin still today, and Roger Patterson on his deathbed swore that this was authentic. And, of course, Bob Gimlin is just one of those guys that just comes off as being extremely honest and straightforward. And it's hard to believe that he would have perpetrated a hoax like this. In fact, there's been nothing quite like it over the years in terms of that's been filmed. So I am fully convinced that the Patterson-Gimlin film is absolutely authentic. Whatever this phenomenon is, they were able to catch it that day and capture it on film. And, you know, if we were to explain that film tomorrow and say, oh, it was all just a bunch of baloney, it doesn't affect the historical accounts of the reality of these creatures. That is, I mean, the volume is massive that these things exist. And the Patterson film is just like a icing on the cake for that.
Of all the things you've investigated, the UFO cases, poltergeist cases, Bigfoot cases, we can't seem to find the Bigfoot. We can't seem to have the physical UFO, as far as we know. Why? Why not?
Absolutely. That's why I lean towards the explanation of same-source phenomena manifestations, because we really should have a body. We should have a bone by now, but we don't. But it doesn't negate the fact that the reports are so credible,
right,
that they demand explanation. So I think we may be dealing with something different here, something more interesting than we even imagine, than just another creature. And I really think that that's where we're heading in with this research. You know, that the fact that the Pentagon was interested in Skinwalker Ranch, that you know, that George Knapp had mm-hmm. uncovered, I think that's pretty fascinating. And it shows that we definitely have a consensus now that we may be dealing with a much larger issue.
Have we ever found a bear skeleton in the woods? You don't hear stories like that.
Right, they're rare. And when a bear gets hit by a car, it makes the news. Where I'm at, a moose being sighted would bring national news, even though, you know, they're around, and they migrate. It's usually a tragic ending for the moose down in this region. But, they're unusual incidents, but they're not unheard of. Unfortunately, you know, the whole nature of the way that Bigfoot encounters and stuff are reported, it used to be years ago, you know how this went, George, you used to find a newspaper clipping and then call up the sources,
yep,
and then track them down, and it would take weeks. Everything is instant now. So we get these reports really, really quickly, and the information gets disseminated very fast. So it's a much different game than it used to be. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. There are, you know, thousands of deer that are killed every year with winter kill, and yet you don't find a lot of their bones. Nature sort of takes care of itself. But in the same regard, I think we really should have a bone by now, but we don't. But it doesn't bother me, because I think there's probably more to it.
What's so unusual about this northeast area, or is it?
That excellent point. I think that it may not be as unusual as people might think. Now, we've been able to document tons of things, from cults to Bigfoot to cryptids to UFOs and so forth. So there's a rich history here. We've got a great area, you know, Lake Champlain with the Lake Champlain Monster, Memphis Magog, et cetera. So, I mean, we've got a great location, but really what it is a microcosm of what's going on in the rest of the world. And I think that if you were to take a magnifying glass and put it over almost any other region in the United States and throughout the world, you would find the same type of paranormal experiences.
Have you had reports of portals or openings out that way?
We've had some weird things with disappearances, and of course, David Politis has done a lot of research with that.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of cases around this area where people have just simply vanished. I'll give you an example. There was one gentleman who was walking back to his car with two other people. They stopped to light a cigarette, so they turned away from the wind. And when they turned back, he was gone, and they've never found him. It's been several years now.
And he was, like, right behind them, right?
He was right in front of them. And when they turned to light their cigarette, he's gone, and they've never found him. And it's been years now. He was from Fairhaven area. So there was a search done by both the Fairhaven, the Vermont police, and the New York State police. And they just haven't found his body. And it just makes no sense. It's just a real head-scratcher. And, of course, they had that case of the person up in Lake Placid who vanished and turned up in Sacramento, California, years ago. And he was on Whiteface Mountain, and they were looking for him. They couldn't find him, and he ends up being, 3,000 miles away with no memory of what had happened. So we do have cases like that. I don't know if they're portals, but they're definitely some strange phenomena going on, and it's of a very consistent nature. The thing that really impresses me is what I call confirmation sightings. And these are, not only highly respectable witnesses, and these are people that are having life-changing experiences and life-altering experiences. And it's not a positive. It's often a negative. Dan Gordon was a police officer who had a Bigfoot sighting. He couldn't talk about it for 22 years before he finally came public. He was my neighbor, and it was very frustrating for him, and he passed a polygraph and everything else. So there's no question about it's a real experience. He also had another police officer with him at the time who saw the same thing he did. That's a trouble for a skeptic to explain, because there's no motive for these people to have these experiences. Now, I'll give you the classic example. We had two Hong Kong nationals that worked at the Chinese restaurant here in Whitehall. And back in 2003, they were fishing up in Clemens, New York. Now, they came back from their fishing trip, and they said, we didn't know you had monkeys up here. And I said, we're like, what do you mean? And they said, well, we saw this big monkey wading through the water when we were fishing. and I said to him, I said, well, what did you do? And he says, well, we went back fishing. But the beauty of that experience is that they, in their cultural mentality, it wasn't unusual to see a primate
right
where they were from. So they just didn't realize we had them here. So by seeing them here, it completely makes it a different case. It's a higher credible. It's a confirmation type sighting that, hey, there's something really going on.
Well, and they obviously saw something.
Oh, absolutely. And they were so matter of fact about it. And he picked out a picture that I had that a great artist here, Eric Miner, done a lot of our artwork. And they picked out a picture that he had drawn. They said, yeah, that's exactly what we saw. And it was a typical Bigfoot type of drawing.
It's true truth. Now, is there anything going on there, like witchcraft or anything weird in that area?
Well, we've had cult activity. Back in the 80s, there was a satanic scare up in the Corinth area, just a little north of us. And what they had is there was a suicide, and there was rumors of a cult going on. And you remember back then there was the Geraldo Rivera Satanism special, and there was kind of a frenzy going on about satanic panics and so forth. The FBI was investigating and so forth. Well, up here they actually brought in Father LaBarre, who was actually an exorcist with the Catholic diocese. And he went up and gave a talk to try to sort of quell the rumors and the hysteria that was going on up in Corinth back then. But it was very typical of those types of satanic scares or panics that were going on in the 80s. But this whole region, you may find cult and sect-type experiences. For instance, not far from Hebert is where William Miller founded the Millerites. And there's actually a church and a farm there today. And that's the group that gathered twice for the end of the world on this huge rock that's located right at the farm. And it's on one of the preserved lists today, so you can go visit. And, you know, if you go up into Chittenden, Vermont, you have what is basically the founding days of spiritualism, when Henry Olcott wrote People from the Other World. And he talked about there were the table rappers, and there was a lot of, you know, charlatanism going on and so forth. And basically, that was where spiritualism is claimed to have started. And there's a really good researcher up there named Jason Smiley who's done a tremendous amount of research into that.
You had mentioned the late Brad Steiger, who was a very prolific author and paranormal investigator, and you had a chance to talk to his late wife, Sherry, before she passed away.
Yeah, I was in contact with Sherry and Brad for years. In fact, I wrote the Amityville chapter for Brad's book on real ghosts and restless spirits and haunted places, and Sherry was a terrific person. And, you know, one day I got done work early. I work an overnight shift. And
okay.
I'm a frozen foods manager, and I was driving home, and I'd gotten done early, which never happens. And so I'm driving home, and I turn on the radio, and I hear this voice, and I'm going, my God, let me think. That's Brad Steiger, and it was Coast to Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And you had been playing the Dearly Departed line.
Yes.
Where you had taken several guests who had passed away and played sections of their interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got home. Now, it was a purely coincidental, so to speak, that I would even have heard this. And when I got home, I contacted Sherry, and she said, Paul, I got up at the night. I had gone to bed, and I was compelled to go over to my radio. And she said she turned on the radio, and the hairs stood up on her neck as she listened to Brad's voice.
Wow.
And she always said, she said, I really appreciate that Coast had played that interview. But it's almost, you know, this is an experience that you can't put in a bottle or bring into a laboratory. It's a common human experience. And it's almost as if Brad was saying hello.
Exactly. Exactly. But he was a great guest too, Paul.
Oh, my God. What an absolute wealth. And you would think by as much knowledge as he had, he'd be 150 years old. But, you know, he just started this when he was young. And he was one of those people. I think the best description I heard of him was that he had no enemies, because he was friends with skeptics. He was friends with virtually anybody who studied the paranormal. And everybody had a tremendous respect for Brad. He's certainly been one of my teachers, and I really miss him a lot.
We have lost so many incredible interviewers and guests. I mean, starting with Art Bell, we've lost Stanton Friedman, Jim Mars, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Brad Steiger, and, you know, Philip Coppens. So many great investigators. They're all gone.
I know. I've got a poster here from Stanton Friedman hanging up that he autographed for me, and it's you know, it's really sad, because these are a lot of my, when I was growing up, these are my heroes. I got to meet Dr. Hynek one time back in the 80s, and that was a real thrill. And you know, it was a different time period back in the 70s, but the phenomena is still here, and the credibility, I think, is really coming forward. And it's unfortunate that people like Stan Friedman and Dr. Hynek didn't see this these recent revelations.
Yeah, absolutely. We're friends with Paul Hynek, Dr. Hynek's son, and he has told us some great stories about the Lonnie Zamora case that I had mentioned earlier, the police officer in Socorro, New Mexico, who saw a UFO and a couple occupants on the side of the road. Thought it was a tipped-over car. When he got closer, realized that's not a car. But that case alone is what convinced Dr. J. Allen Hynek to start believing in these UFOs.
That's absolutely right. I remember he said that he could no longer dismiss this out of hand. And, you know, and there's another example, too. You talk about a confirmation sighting. Lonnie Zamora had no interest in being put into the spotlight with this case. It was a negative experience on his life. And, you know, and yet he's extremely credible. And it's, you know, one of the things that we did here for Bigfoot witnesses was we passed a legislation which would draw attention to the history of the creature sightings in this area so that people like Dan Gordon, people like who've experienced these types of experiences don't have to, you know, almost go to their grave, you know, clutching them so that they can, talk about them.
Absolutely. We take text and tweets. Paul, Tom, what do you have for Paul?
Well, this one from Sean in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Do the Bigfoot creatures realize our curiosity, and how aggressive can they get?
Two good questions there, Paul.
Yeah, I think that there's obviously there's more going on, so that yes, I think they're much more aware of us than we may be of them at times, and they're very cautious. Of course, I think we're delving into a paranormal area there. And as far as aggressiveness, if you go down to like the Honey Island swamp areas, they may be a little more aggressive than they are up here. But the creature reports that we get in the Northeast are by and large fairly benign encounters, just the negative stigma attached to having seen something that's completely, you know, unexplainable to many people. There are a few reports of aggressive creatures, and I think that would be typical with any species.
Paul, have paranormal investigations changed over the years?
Absolutely. Like we had talked before, you used to grab a newspaper article, and it would take weeks and weeks and weeks to get responses. I remember when I was investigating the Chinese Che Ren reports, the Wild Man reports, I had established a relationship with some scientists over there who were exchanging information, you know, basically newspaper clippings. But the process was long. We had to translate articles, and we had to wait weeks for packages to arrive and so forth. Now it's absolutely instant. My brother and I were able to put this book together. He's in New Zealand. I'm in Whitehall, New York. So, I mean, the time factor is much, much more, beneficial to the researchers. And I can give you a pretty good example of that. There was breaking news tonight, March 7th. I just got the report of a meteorite exploding over Vermont. It released the equivalent of 400 pounds of TNT and shook residents' homes and things over,
my God,
over parts of Vermont.
Thank God it didn't hit, huh?
Yeah, that object was seen over Plattsburgh, New York, and Mount Pelier and so forth. And this recent report that we had just came in. It was February 28th, and it was at the highest elevation on Route 7 in Bennington, Vermont. And what is fascinating is that this gentleman had observed a creature. He's the passenger in a vehicle. His wife's driving. He looks at the woods because he's looking for deer and things, and he says it looked like a large figure, bigger than a man. He said it definitely wasn't a bear or moose. He said it was dark in color, black. He said it looked like it was just crashing through the trees. And he was heading south, and the creature was going north. And he said if you look at it as a time clock, you know, with 12 o'clock being on top and 6 on the bottom, that he saw it at about 1 o'clock and lost sight of it at about 4 o'clock.
It sounds like a classic UFO case, Paul. We're going to come back and take calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And we will take your calls with Paul Bartholomew when we come back as we talk about the strange anomalies, so get ready for that. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Paul Bartholomew. And, Paul, let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Bill in Los Angeles to get things rolling here. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Georgia, Paul.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. As a former newspaper writer, I really appreciate what you said about maintaining objectivity above all else. And based on the audio recordings of apparently Sasquatch vocalization and various videos, it seems like the most plausible objective theory is that Bigfoot is a Neanderthal-like hominid that evolved and possibly interbred with us. What do you think about that?
Interesting theory. Go ahead, Paul.
Certainly a plausible theory. I think most of the mainstream flesh and blood scientists point to this creature possibly being Gigantopithecus or a descendant of that. I'm open to every possibility. The thing that bothers me is that there are these paranormal connections that sometimes pop up, and they seem to be more than just coincidental. But yeah, I am wide open to any of these theories.
What do you think is the most plausible one of anything?
I think with the better understanding of quantum physics and the discovery of dark matter and so forth, I think we're probably dealing with that different manifestations from the same source phenomena. And I think this is ultimately may lie within our own consciousness, our own ability to perceive our realities. But listen, if someone found a bone of a Sasquatch, or they think was a bone of it, I'd be the first one there to have it analyzed scientifically. I am wide open.
What do your friends think of your paranormal investigating experience? What do they think? You're a little weird, or they think it's cool? What?
No, I think it's largely a positive because, you know, even people that are very skeptical, they'll take you aside, particularly police and so forth, and they'll say, you know, this happened to me so-and-so, but don't use my name. And we get that report a lot. So I think we've been in this long enough. My brother and I have been researching this for, you know, between 40, 50 years. And I think we've been in it long enough, and we show it's the credibility of the sighting and the phenomena that is frontmost and foremost in our research. And I think we have a respectability here, and we really try to report this as accurately as possible.
Let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Hey, Joe.
Paul, I have two parts to my question. If I look at Hollywood films like Planet of the Apes, sometimes I think these people aren't using their imaginations, that they actually know these cryptids and are getting their film scripts from intimate knowledge of these cryptids. And there's a group of people that know these cryptids as compared to the average person who does not. And then you look back at ancient Rome and Greece, you see something similar. Plato seemed to know about Atlantis. Most people didn't. You look at the Iliad and Odyssey in Rome, there seemed to be people there that knew about cryptids and some that didn't. So I'm wondering if there's a strata of society that somehow knows these creatures to the exclusion of others, like people like me.
And is Hollywood doing anything, Paul, with knowledge from government or something?
Well, I don't know if it's a conspiratorial contribution, but if anyone looks into the research and actually takes time to delve into the records that are readily available to everyone, you will find these case histories. And nowadays, with search engines for newspapers, you can just put in terms and get all the research you would ever need on almost anything. So, yeah, you know, that's a plausible theory. There was a theory that perhaps when the government wanted to discredit UFOs, that they would put an emphasis on contactees versus cases like Socorro. So, yeah, you could always get some sort of manipulation like that, and that's a plausible hypothesis. I respect that. I think, though, the material is there. And if anyone wants to really delve in, grab some John Keel, some Brad Steiger, you can go back to Long John Neville with his reports, you know, and he was basically a skeptic, but he would report on all this phenomena. So I think it's there for anyone to see.
Let's go to Richard in Alaska now. Hey, Rich, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey, anyways, I guess I've got a question for you, and for us to share this incident that happened with my sister. You ever used U.S. Air Forces? Because I guess they're starting to take civilians, you know, the cases, you know, where people see UFOs or Bigfoot. And once they got the, you know, the coordinates, you know, the sightings, what they've seen, you know, they can fly by, do a flyby, or They also have their satellites in the sky. And also, well, my sister had a worker for her that he went up in the mountains up there north of Fairbanks to look at a gold mine. Well, he didn't. He gave his wife the topographical area where he's going to be at, plus the coordinates. Well, he didn't show up. He took the dog with him. Anyway, she reported it to the search and rescue team there in Fairbanks, and they had a group of guys out there, plus they had a National Guard out there looking for him for like 6 days, and they finally gave up. And then my sister was on the phone with my cousin, and her husband just got shipped to Amador Air Force Base there in Anchorage. And he was over search and rescue. So my sister gave him a call, and he says, yeah, we can find you if he got the coordinates. And well, anyway, she said, the only thing we do is ask from civilians, you know, a contribution. And she gave him, you know, some fishing, go out fishing with their clients. You know, she donated some of that time for them. And, well, anyways, they, so he plugged in the coordinates of where he's going to be at, and that night, he plugged it in his computer and hit one of those satellites. And, well, that night, they seen a fire. So the next morning, they did a flyby, and they found him and his dog like about 13 miles away from where that gold mine was located at.
Alive?
Alive, yep. And, well, anyways, it's pretty interesting how they use satellites. And, well, the reason you said that they put satellites up there is because they had so many calls, and they had to do so many flybys every day because people reporting UFO sightings. So now they can just plug the coordinates in their computer and pull it off the satellite.
Oh, it works. And what about with Google, Paul? Do you think Google Earth can find things?
Oh, I think it can be used as a tool just like anything else. And, you know, he mentions how dense and, you know, these areas are. You know, the Adirondacks is a huge, vast wilderness that you could put. I remember they used to promote it by putting pictures of parks, other parks that are well-known inside of it. And if you remember when the prisoners escaped from Dannemora, that became a national story.
Yes.
They were on the loose for a couple of weeks, and what actually caught them was that they had made mistakes. One ran across an open field, and the other had actually shot at some people. Had they not done that, we might still be looking for them, because that was a case in which we used helicopter tracking, we used dogs, we used all our mass social media. I remember when I was doing some hiking at that time period, they had posters up of the two convicts, and, you know, none of that worked. It was their own mistakes that actually led them in. People underestimate just how vast and how rugged terrain there is in the Adirondacks here.
Next, Tommy's got another text or tweet for you, Paul. What do you have, Tom?
Hey, Paul, this one in from Jocelyn in Dallas. Do these creatures just wander, or do they have the ability to sense direction?
That's interesting. Dr. Cook, who I studied under at Castleton, felt that when we created this database of reports for Bigfoot sightings, we found that there were certain months that these creatures were very prevalent. And it may be suggestive of migration routes. For instance, that recent Bigfoot sighting that just happened was at the highest point on Route 7 in Bennington area. That sighting coincides with a sighting that occurred in 2003 in almost the same location. And we get this pop up time and time again. And they felt that this may be some sort of migration route. It may be something even more that we just don't understand yet.
Absolutely. Next up, we go to Jim in Los Angeles. Hey, Jim, go ahead, sir.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
George, there's a gentleman that you might want to get on your program. His name is Josh Gates. He's an archaeologist, and he lives in New York City. And he went over to the Himalaya Mountains several years ago, and he went high up into the Himalaya Mountains to this village up there. And this Buddhist monk brought out this red cone-shaped skull cap of a Yeti.
Aha, okay.
They let him take a single strand of hair out of it, and he took it back to New York and had it analyzed, and it came back. It wasn't human hair, nor was it monkey hair. It was something in between. And I think maybe prehistoric man has survived the Ice Age.
You might be right about that. What do you think of that possibility, Paul?
Oh, completely. You know, I'm open to anything. And any type of physical evidence you can ever gather that can be analyzed and put in, I am all for it. There's, I have no preconceived conclusions. I have, leanings and obviously conjecture. But, any type of evidence. When we go out, we look for tracks. We cast if we can. We look for hairs. Anything we can find, we try to gather. So I'm all for that.
Let's go back to Jim. Jim, did you have a question, sir?
No, that's about it.
Okay. It's a great story. And we'll try to check that Gates guy out. And Brendan is with us in Austin, Texas. Hey, Brendan, go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Okay.
Shout out to everybody on the Facebook page. We're always listening to that every night. I listen. I work at a factory at one of those factories that delivers packages. Listen every single night. So it's time for a new breed of investigators, like you guys were saying. You know, I'm in my 20s, and I've experienced a lot of this stuff. And I called before because I've had a 4-hour experience here, like in the middle of town, lights in the sky, and some shape-shifting Sasquatch thing. And I was living in an apartment that had poltergeist activity. Things were being thrown. People were being punched. Lights in the sky. People were possessed. Violent EVPs. And but back to the Sasquatch night, it was a mile away from that apartment where all that was going on, and we had a friend go missing. You said you had somebody turn around to light a cigarette and they went missing. That same thing happened to one of our friends while we were camping, having lights in the sky and what seemed to be a bipedal, very heavy entity on the ground that seemed to be able to read our minds and shapeshift, or at least control our perceptions of how we were seeing it. And afterwards that night, my friend had three red marks that I photographed on his foot, like a triangle. And as far as poltergeists and aliens, Sasquatch and ghosts, there seems to be a tie-in between all of them in some locations.
What do you think of that, Paul?
I agree. Your friend came back or apparently wasn't gone for a long time, but these abduction-type experiences happen. And very fortunately, we hear about the ones where they come back. But these other ones, they end up being missing person reports, and we never hear from them again. So, I'm glad your friend came back, and I hope you're able to document it. Take pictures of the red marks, document the exact times, the exact feelings, what the weather was at the time, as much detail as possible. Because a detail that you take down regarding an experience like that may be something significant in the future.
Absolutely. Let's go to West Hartford, Connecticut. Chili, go ahead.
Hey, this is Chili from West Hartford. Hi, George.
Hi, Chill.
I'd just like to report a sighting I had near your stomping grounds, Paul. Lake George area, the northern tip. I was camping out with friends at Rogers Rock Campground. And we had a lakeside campsite. And one night, I was just standing, and, I looked up over the lake, and there was like a pink ball just hanging over it. And I just kind of joked to my friends, hey, you want to see a UFO? And so they all came over, and we looked at it, and it stood in its place for a few seconds, and it slowly moved across the lake. And then once it was on the other side, it just shot off. And, we couldn't believe it. Are there a lot of sightings up at that part of the lake, Paul?
Yeah, there are. In fact, when Finding Bigfoot came up to shoot an episode on New York, they focused on Whitehall, but when they did there overnight, it was up in the Lake George area where there had been several sightings. And of course, anytime you have bodies of water, you a lot of times have this orb phenomena as well, where you have strange lights, you have the vocalizations, you have sightings. So, Lake George is a pretty good area. It's also a very historic area up there.
Paul, I give your brother our regards, and we'll talk to you next time when you have another investigative story for us, all right?
Very good. Thank you, George. Stay safe and take care.
You too, my friend. Paul's book, of course, that he wrote with his brother, The Mysterious North Woods. strange tales from all over the northeast of the United States. Truly remarkable. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.